Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please Court and Counsel, my name is Maureen Rosette, the attorney for Ralph Davis, the appellant in this matter. What we have here is a very complex factual case as far as Mr. Davis goes. He has various physical problems, but the psychological impairments are at issue here. He underwent seven psychological evaluations in the course of 4 years. Basically, every doctor that evaluated him, treated him, and saw him felt that he was exaggerating his symptoms or malingering. But despite that fact, Dr. Cools testified at the hearing in April of 2007 that malingering is considered a medical diagnosis. So you would think that when you malinger, you're faking everything, but despite that fact, Dr. Cools, Dr. Ridgway, Dr. Arnold, they all felt that he still had underlying impairments of a personality disorder, as well as some sort of pain disorder or somatoform disorder, despite the fact that he was malingering.
Well, why isn't it the situation that you focus a lot on Dr. Cools, and the ALJ didn't properly discount Dr. Cool? Well, Dr. Cool was not the treating physician, right?
Correct.
And his treating physician actually, over time, altered, I can't remember if it was a he or she.
He
altered his view of your client, right?
He did.
And so it just seems like this case comes down to a comparison of the doctors who say Mr. Davis is employable and those who say he might not be. Why was it error for the ALJ to conclude that he was employable when substantial evidence supports it? You know, that's...
Okay, so Dr. Arnold did treat Mr. Davis in 2004 and 2005. He had 14 sessions with Mr. Davis and evaluated him once in that 2004.
But the treating physicians are always treated a little bit differently than the other ones, right?
At that time, Dr. Arnold was not treating him in 2007. When he saw him in 2007, he was not treating him. He saw Mr. Davis for a GAU evaluation at the time, and he just barely mentioned that Mr. Davis had sessions in 2006 with him, but he didn't really.
Okay, so is the point of this he's not a treating physician, or what is the point of what you're saying?
The point is that he wasn't a treating physician at the time, but even so, even though he changed his position he still said he was malingering, but he still gave him, when you look at the form that he completed of Mr. Davis, he still felt that he had several moderate work-related limitations, which the ALJ never included in the hypothetical question to the vocational expert.
Could I ask you about that hypothetical question? Because an initial hypothetical was asked, and then Davis's counsel revises that. And it seems to me that part of this may rise and fall on whether that revision fairly included, you know, not only maybe some minimum of Dr. Cool, but also Dr. Arnold, and whether, in fact, there was not some inconsistency, and therefore, what he ultimately gave the opinion on included both Cool and Arnold, which means he couldn't work.
He didn't include Dr. Cool and Dr. Arnold in both of them. He said he did, but what he did was he said that what his hypothetical actually was that Mr. Davis would have limitations in, or he could do simple work-related tasks. He would have difficulties with working with the public. He'd have difficulties working with supervisors, but he could have superficial contact with supervisors. But Dr. Arnold also said he would have difficulties with maintaining his behavior in a work setting, as well as limitations, and this was the revised version, that he would not be able to respond appropriately to changes I don't know what the exact terminology is, but that he would moderate limitations in the ability to respond appropriately to and tolerate the pressures and expectations of a normal work setting, which was never included in the hypothetical question to the vocational expert by the ALJ.
Right.
But when Mr. Davis's attorney added in Dr. Cool's limitations after Dr. Cool's reviewed the record, the vocational expert said Mr. Davis was not going to be able to work with those limitations.
Let me just ask you, as I read it, those limitations actually were not really inconsistent with Dr. Arnold 2007. They're more or less the same, aren't they?
They were pretty close, except that...
I mean, I know that's not precise.
They were pretty close, yeah, but Dr. Arnold was giving him more moderate limitations, whereas Dr. Cools was indicating that he would have marked work-related limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, Dr. Cools had everybody's information. In that 2007 evaluation completed by Dr. Arnold, he never... reviewed any of the records. He never even went back to his records where he never put any of those in. Dr. Ridgway did. Dr. Cools looked at all the records and they both outlined them. And even so, Dr. Ridgway said, you know, that he is malingering. Yes, he is malingering. But that, and Dr. Cools said, but this is a medical diagnosis. And so despite that fact, Dr. Cools said, here's how I had to break it out. I had to break it out and put that aside. And his focus was on whether he could perform any competitive employment, because he does have, in fact, a pretty severe personality disorder as well as a pain disorder on top of malingering. He embellishes.
Looking at Dr. Cool, when he talks about markedly limited, he talks he couldn't really get along with coworkers, couldn't accept instructions, etc. And that's almost identical to what Dr. Arnold said in 2007, ability to understand, ability to,
correct,
you know, get along with coworkers and understand instructions. So it seems like they're actually saying the same thing. They just use different, what would you call it, monikers.
Severity of limitations.
Yeah, one says markedly limited, and here's what you can't do, and the other one says definitely can't do these things, but I call it moderate. So does their label matter, or is what matters what the vocational expert ultimately concludes from the substance of those?
I think we didn't even get to the fifth step in this situation, because the ALJ never included all of Dr. Arnold's limitations. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that we never got to step five because the question was never asked. The question was asked about Dr. Cools, but the question wasn't asked about Dr. Arnold's limitations at the hearing level, where if you included those two other moderate limitations that he gave, that Dr. Arnold gave at the same time, or in 2007, then I've been doing this a long time. Most vocational experts would say that you're not going to be able to work with those limitations. But the question was never asked, so we never got to step five.
So what do you want us to do?
I'd want you to remand it so we can go back and look at what the vocational expert would say with regard to these, with Dr. Arnold's limitations, because it was never asked. And that was never asked of the ALJ or of the vocational expert to determine whether he could do the job, his past work or other work in the national economy. So that's what I would ask. Then I will stop right there. Thank you.
Let me please the court, Your Honors. Willie Lee for the Commissioner of Social Security.
What benefits are at stake here? What's been waived based on prior claims and date of past insurance coverage? What are we talking about here?
We're talking about Title 16 Supplemental Security Income. It's not based on your work history and your contributions to the Social Security retirement system. That aspect of his claim was denied in the past, and his insurance, because Title II, which is the disability/retirement system, his insurance expired for his eligibility for that back in 2002, I believe. And so the agency had also denied his claim past that point, so that Title II is no longer on the table. It's only Title 16 Supplemental Security Income.
Well, if Dr. Cole's testimony had been given credit, is Mr. Davis entitled to benefits?
What aspect of... Yes, I believe it would, because Dr. Cools testified that he basically couldn't work because he didn't want to work. But that leads to my initial point, Your Honors, is that malingering is a diagnosis because a doctor has to identify it. But Social Security disability benefits is based on identifying disability based on a medically determinable impairment. This is not an impairment. It's simply a behavior. And it's identified and defined in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, published by the American Psychiatric Association. That's in the brief. And it says clearly that in order to reach an identification or a diagnosis of malingering, the claimant or the patient has to have an intentional production of false symptoms or allegations in order to achieve an external incentive. And otherwise, it might be called something else, factitious disorder, conversion disorder. Those are mental impairments in which maybe the patient is not volitionally or intentionally misrepresenting or making inconsistent statements, but it's not for an external incentive anyway. They just can't help it. They lie. Here, it's been identified that Mr. Davis is malingering. He's intentionally exaggerating his symptoms in order to get something. And
does that mean he can work? What is that? Where does that get you?
Well, it goes back to the basic disability analysis. What do your medically determinable impairments, how do they limit you? And on top of that, how much malingering is there? Now, we're trying to separate out the malingering and getting you back to what's left, the medically determinable impairment.
Can I ask you on that point before you leave malingering? It seemed that the ALJ made some kind of finding or to the effect that that Dr. Cools apparently accepted these exaggerations as part of his analysis. And when you actually then go read Dr. Cools, he says, well, he actually specifically addresses this, and then he says, in spite of the attempts at malingering, in other words, he puts it right up on the table, at core, this person can't work. So right there, it seems that the ALJ, mischaracterized or was just wrong about what Dr. Cools did. Would you address that, please?
Yes, that is what Dr. Cools testified. I think whether or not it was a mischaracterization, I think the analysis would be that the analysis is still the same. How do we separate where malingering started and the impairments began?
But if the ALJ is just flat wrong in his assumption that Dr. Cools accepted this malingering when we know he didn't based on his testimony, why doesn't that already skew the whole lineup?
I think it was just poor wording. I mean, when an ALJ says,
well, we don't have anything else.
I mean, you've accepted.
I know you aren't. Right, you have to defend what he said, but.
Yeah, I mean, an ALJ, when they say that you've basically adopted what this person has alleged, it can come across as saying you've just merely accepted the testimony without really weighing the medical. But I think the conclusion is the same regardless of the analysis, is that the ALJ disagreed with how much Dr. Cools factored in the malingering. And, I mean, I would note again that Dr. Cools, even though that's what he concluded, he also qualified it by saying that it was difficult for himself to determine at what point malingering started and where his impairments stopped. So that's basically true of every doctor in this case. They said, because of the enormous malingering here, I can't tell what he can really do, but here's my best guess. No tests were considered valid because they were his exaggeration.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to.
So what's your best argument why the ALJ should be affirmed?
Dr. Arnold found that at most in 2007 that Mr. Davis had moderate limitations at most, despite his malingering. I can't recall if he was treating him at the time, but his treating history lends weight to his opinion.
What limitations is he talking about?
Dr. Arnold in 2007. Limitations were based on following instructions, learning tasks, performing tasks, interacting with the public, and these were all factored into the RFC, the final functional capacity.
I find this just the ALJ said that he had only, Arnold opined he had only mild to moderate functional limitations, and he didn't think that these impairments would last 3 months. And what you're talking about is a underlying psychological problem that's permanent.
Right, and that regardless, they were weighed into the final RFC. I mean, he found that, the ALJ found ultimately that he was limited to short, simple instructions, no public interaction, no superficial contact with coworkers and supervisors. I mean, those are not light mental limitations. I mean, those are significant restrictions in...
Kind of like he can work in a black box by himself?
Yeah.
Is that where you end up?
Perhaps, but the vocational expert testified that even with those limitations, he could go back to his work at step four. And I think ultimately, this really is just a case where you had various doctors, some in one camp saying one thing, some in the other saying the other. The ALJ had to resolve all of them, and he did so. I mean, ultimately, the plaintiff has the burden to show exactly what his limitations are based on the evidence. Because no doctor could find that, could nail that down, what you're left with is just evidence going every which way, and the ALJ is left to resolve it.
Okay.
And that's...
Any further questions?
Thank you. I yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
First off, Your Honors, Mr. Lee was miscorrect in stating that this was just a Title 16. This is actually a Title 2 and Title 16 claim. At the time, the ALJ's decision does, in fact, incorporate that he alleged disability as of March 14, 2000, and his date last insured was March 31, 2002, so it does incorporate both Titles 2 and Title 16 into this. Also, Mr. Lee indicates at the very end of his argument that the ALJ's job is to cull out all of the evidence, basically, but he also is, that's the main reason you have a medical expert at a hearing, is to determine what exactly is going on with a person. When you look at all of these complex issues that are going on with a person, he had Dr. Cools there to do that for him, and that's the reason. He's not, the ALJ is not a psychologist. The ALJ is, he doesn't know all the ins and outs of psychology, just like Dr. Cools, and that's the reason you have a psychologist or a medical expert at hearings, is to get in a complex case like this, you want the person to lay out what's going on. My client does exaggerate his symptoms, yes, but despite that, he's got a personality disorder, and he's also got a pain disorder, and Dr. Cools very clearly laid that out. He dealt with the malingering, he dealt with all that, and that's the main reason you have a medical expert at the hearing. So that's my argument. Thank you.
The matter just argued is submitted for decision.